All right, I think we'll go ahead and get started. I appreciate everybody being on the call today, where we're going to talk about financial coaching, which I know for some of you maybe feels like a topic we've addressed on these calls and other sessions before, but let me assure you there's some new information that we can share today, and also some just updates on existing materials and resources that are out there. So hopefully it's useful, even if you're a coaching old-timer. If you're new to the coaching topic, then hopefully this gives you a broad overview of this field and how you can use it in your own work. Just as a quick overview, this is Lunchtime Learning for the month of April. We just have one more Lunchtime Learning call coming up, and that'll be May 18th. That'll be our last one of the academic year. And on that call, we'll have colleagues sharing a series of books that they've reviewed, potentially that would be useful to you as you think about your own programming and program planning, and also for your own summer reading to the extent that you have a chance to do any of that. So that next call will be group effort of the reviewers who have generously volunteered their time to review the books and share their insights with you. So we'll have a discussion around them. But today we're going to talk about financial coaching. And so like all of these Lunchtime Learning calls, the information is posted on the website, fyi.uwex.edu/financial-series. These calls are recorded, so this call is currently being recorded and will be posted in a few days on that same website as an MP3 file, so no need to record. You can listen to these or re-listen to these as you want to and need to in whatever format makes sense to you. There's on that website a brief, about a four-page brief, that talks about this topic of financial coaching. It's called Applications of Financial Coaching. It's brief 2015-4. And that's predominantly what I'll be speaking from today, and also will reflect the comments that Peggy will make about the specific A4 model that we want to try to introduce to folks today if you're not familiar with that. On the website, you'll notice there's a number of blue underscored links. So these are hot links to other resources, including two prior Lunchtime Learning sessions we've had related to this topic of coaching, but also a link to a brief that we put out last year with the Asset Funders Network, which it's about a 12-page color, nicely laid out brief that was designed for funders to help them understand coaching and coaching training and different elements of coaching. So I would encourage you to use that, not so much to for your own use, but as you try to talk to other audiences, partners, funders, or whoever else about the coaching concept, that might be a useful tool as well. So that's available on the website. There's also in the green box on the Lunchtime Learning website, there's a link to the financial coaching website, which is just fyi.uwex.edu/financial-coaching. And that site has, if you haven't seen it in a while, has really grown. There's a lot of content there. There's videos, there's print materials, there's tools and resources, there's links to other resources. And that's going to, that site is actually going to be both adding content and streamlining format over the next, 6 or 8 months. So that's just a nice resource to keep track of. That's also where you can sign up for the financial coaching newsletters, which come out about 3 times a year. And so those newsletters, you can sign up for that mailing list at that website as well. So just a general set of resources to be aware of. But for today, we want to really focus on the brief, the Applications of Financial Coaching brief. And I think the way we'll proceed is I'll provide some overview, which for if you've been in this field a while, maybe it is a repeat of some things you know. But for those of you who've not been around so much, this will provide you some background on the field. And then I'll talk a little bit about best practices and turn it over to Peggy, who can talk about the A4 model, which is a model we've been experimenting with at Wisconsin. It's sort of unique to us and part of the training that Peggy's been doing and many of you have taken part in. And then we'll talk a little bit at the end about sort of the state of the field and particularly the future of coaching. There's been a proliferation of coaching trainings, measuring outcomes. I think there's a lot of increased attention on financial coaching. And so for all of us who are engaged in the coaching field, it's more and more important to be thinking about measuring outcomes and be thinking about how our work fits into the broader coaching network as well. And one thing I want to I think it's public knowledge now, so I hope I'm not getting anybody in any trouble. But so Sue Taylor, many of you know, worked in Dane County with Cooperative Extension, is now going to be working in La Crosse on a national pilot around financial coaching designed to be provided to vulnerable populations and veterans. So she's going to be a full-time coach working in the state of Wisconsin with a coaching program that's been rolled out by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and the Department of Labor and the Department of Veterans Affairs and some others. So it's a real exciting experiment. There's only about, I think now about 30 sites of these across the country. So it's exciting that Wisconsin is one of those sites and that one of our own, so to speak, is part of that project. So congratulations to Sue and really to all of you, because I think it's a testament to the strength of coaching around Wisconsin Extension. Alright, so let me talk about first a little bit about what we think about in terms of coaching and why coaching is different. And towards the end of the brief, you'll see where we contrast coaching from counseling and education. And, you know, sometimes maybe we make too much of these contrasts between coaching and other techniques. And in the end, coaching is a technique. It's a strategy. It's not the outcome. It's just a way of doing our work. But what's important is we learned that just providing people information or even doing things for people, like you might do in an intensive counseling model or a crisis intervention model, doesn't actually change their behaviors in the long run. So people need both more than education and just somebody holding their hand. They need a framework, a scaffold, a system for their sort of learning and development, for their confidence to be able to take on financial management tasks on their own. And that's essentially what coaching provides, is a framework for people to develop an attention to goals, attention to behaviors that they want to work on, and then some monitoring or some accountability as they start to think about how to take advantage of the resources that are developed through this alliance between the coach and the client or the coachee to begin to better take on and really self-manage their own financial behaviors. And that's an important distinction, the fact that we're really trying to encourage people to be, more self-aware and more able to take on financial behaviors on their own, even in the absence of the coaching relationship. So it's very much a learning and development model. It is also very, very behaviorally focused. And it recognizes that people struggle. Sometimes it's not that they don't know what to do. It's that there are a lot of other things that get in the way of doing what they think they should do. So it's a different kind of approach from that respect. Coaching itself is not unique to financial issues. There's health coaching. There's coaching provided for people in dieting or in nutrition and even in exercise. There's career coaching. There's executive coaching. There's lots of applications of coaching. Financial coaching is just a newer application of a strategy that's really been around since the 1950s. So it's not necessarily a innovative approach. It's an innovative application of the approach. A key aspect of coaching is a focus on goals, and that the client or coachee is deciding what it is important, what's important to them, and what they want to work on. And that sometimes is at odds with financial education or financial capability programs that are designed to do a specific thing. For example, if you're in a program that really the goal is to get people to buy a house, then everybody's goal is to buy a house, whether or not that's their primary financial goal or not. And so the coaching model is much more agnostic about where people are at, meeting them are at, where they're at, and whatever it is they want to work on. It may be something very simple, like paying bills on time or following a budget or making a budget. It may be something much more complex, like being able to save up to buy a first home or qualify for a mortgage. So it's really very diverse in terms of the financial behaviors and issues that clients will be talking about in coaching sessions. One of the things about coaching is that it's typically going to be a multiple meeting or multiple session kind of experience. So it's unlikely that people would get away with a single meeting with a coach, develop a plan, develop implementation steps, and then be held accountable for their behavior, and not have any more follow-up. So typically coaching sessions are multiple sessions. It might be two sessions. We've in some data we've seen that 2 or 3 seems to be pretty common. But 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, and on up, happen as well. So different people respond in different ways. And a key aspect of the relationship between the coach and the coachee is that, there will be some follow-up. And that may not always be face-to-face. It may be an electronic means or a telephone or some other means. But that follow-up tends to be a key component of what makes coaching different from, say, a crisis counseling where, you know, really we just want to try to help you in the immediate term and any follow-up might happen somewhere else or through some other program. The literature on financial coaching is very new. There isn't a whole lot of research or evidence on financial coaching specifically. There's some studies in the field now that are very, very promising, but not yet released. But there is a long literature of coaching generally in other settings. And so we, from positive psychology, we have studies on coaching in health or in coaching in educational achievement or other settings. But it's suggestive that coaching really does help people establish goals, to establish implementation steps. So, you know, they break their goals down into tasks that they can take care of. And then they tend to be more future-oriented after coaching. They tend to have more confidence in their own ability to achieve the goals or the activities that they want to do. So we have evidence in other settings that seems like it would be pretty applicable in the financial sector as well. You know, a key aspect of the way coaching is designed is not to say, let's talk about all the things in your life that have gone wrong and all the people and institutions and other things that you blame where you're at on. It's just the opposite. It's the past is the past. Let's think about the future. What would it take to get you in even a slightly better state of financial well-being or financial capability? What would it make you to be feel better about your finances? And so sometimes those are small, very, very incremental steps that people will take. It's very much focused on problem solving and of, you know, focusing on the goals that are important to the client. So because of this, the coach themselves may not be an expert on financial topics. And in fact, sometimes a financial expert is not a great coach because they always know the right thing to do and they might jump right to the activity that, that people feel like they, you know, that the coach's perception of what the person should do, sort of increases the more expertise that coach has. In some ways, the best coach is someone who understands the coaching process, but isn't going to recommend a particular course of action for the client or the coachee. Another key aspect of coaching is this opportunity for practice and monitoring. So the coach and the coachee talk about a goal. The coachee sort of establishes, here's something that they want to do, and here's when they want to do it by. And then sort of both parties are now accountable to making sure that that happens. And both parties know that, including the coachee, and that makes it more likely for them to take that action. And so that follow-up can take a lot of different forms. It might be a phone call or a meeting, or it might be something as simple as a text message. And so, but the key thing is that we know that people sometimes fail to act because they procrastinate, because they forget. Something's just not top of mind. And finances is really easy to put off to procrastinate. Or it's, you know, a self-control issue where sometimes these things are painful and I don't want to do it. And so the coach can reinforce that self-control, get people to be more self-reliant, to exercise that those executive skills that they have, to set a plan and stick to it. And that seems to be a common theme across coaching, regardless of the setting, whether it's health or any other setting, that we're helping clients practice these skills and then apply those skills over time until the point where they feel like they can do it on their own. And so most clients graduate from a coaching relationship with a greater sense of financial empowerment, and they can start to take on tasks without the coach. And that's really the goal, is to create people who have more stronger sense of financial well-being, stronger financial capability, and more self-reliant in terms of their financial management ability. You'll see in the brief there's a set of best practices for financial coaching. And for those of you who've been to coaching training, you'll have seen these before. But, you know, the key thing is it's client-centered. There's not a specific outcome in mind. And I think a home buyer education program or a debt reduction program or a budget program, those are all great programs. And so in no way are we saying that you shouldn't do those programs. They just might not be coaching programs. They might be programs where you use some coaching approaches, but because the outcome, the client behavior is predetermined, it may not be great for a true coaching model where it's really letting the client drive the agenda. You know, a key part of coaching is helping people be more self-aware of their financial behaviors and then following up on their actions, so some kind of monitoring going forward. And those are some key steps that aren't always built into a counseling or education model. You know, meetings are typically on a regular basis. Some coaching programs, it's weekly. Some, it's monthly. Some, it's just whenever we can catch up. So there isn't necessarily a model in that sense. And it's going to vary by the client. Some clients need more regular attention. Some can't do that regular attention. They just have too many other things going on. So that's going to vary significantly across programs. Some programs actually begin with a contract between the coach and the client. Of the coachee. And, you know, I think there's some value to that. Not all programs do this, but the contract really lays out the expectations. It helps establish that trust. In some cases, it says the things that the coach won't do, like the coach won't do something for you. The coach won't sell you anything or recommend a specific product. So there might be some clear responsibilities for both parties in terms of the coachee following up on communications and agreeing to show up or cancel if they can't show up, those kinds of things. You know, one of the things we've talked a lot about with this new coaching program that's being rolled out by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is the location for coaching sessions. You know, the client has to feel comfortable and safe. They have to feel like they're in an environment that is confidential and they can really talk about the issues that they need to talk about. And so, you know, meeting in a public place or meeting in an office without walls, meeting in, certain places may not be conducive to that. So actually, when clients and coaches are meeting face-to-face, or even when they're talking on the phone, if there's a lot of background noise and that kind of thing, that can deteriorate the coaching relationship. So there are some logistical sides of this that might actually be important for outcomes. Coaches generally are not experts, so they're not going to say, oh, it sounds like you have some legal issues. Let's try to see if we can somehow take some legal action with the courts to take care of this issue. That's generally not the way they're going to approach an issue like that. They might say, it sounds like one of your goals is related to something that might involve the legal system. How would you go about finding support in the legal community? Have you heard of such and such a resource? I can make a referral for you. So it's more of a referral kind of system, based on the client's needs for expertise. So expertise in law, credit counseling, any kind of social service where people might be eligible for benefits or maybe are at risk in some way. Making those referrals is really important, and having that referral system for coaches is important. You know, obviously coaches should never recommend financial products, types or kinds or brands or specific products. They can help the client wade through their options, but the client always in the end is the one who's choosing any financial product, if at all. I mean, many times coach relationships aren't even product related. And then I think a key thing we're seeing that's exciting about coaching is an increased use of technology, video Skyping kind of relationships, or text messages, maybe even automated text messages to follow up with people in terms of their goals. So, we're seeing a lot of exciting promising practices in those areas, and some of those are also documented on that fyi.uwex.edu/financial-coaching website that you can check out further. I'm going to pause there and let Peggy talk a bit about something I think new for a lot of folks here, and that's the A4 model.
Okay, thanks. So on the brief, it has a section on the A4 model. And the reason we put together a specific financial coaching model is that, as it says in there, there's really no coaching model that's been specifically designed for the area of personal finances. I know at least a dozen different models out there for coaching, and I'm sure there's a lot more, that have been around for decades. And they've been used for, positive psychology coaching or executive coaching or the health coaching that's out there. but nothing that could tie into like some of the specific needs of people working on their personal finances. So based on what we know about coaching and based on what we know about behavioral economics and financial capacity building, this was an opportunity to kind of bring those two together to come up with something that is, you know, pretty easy for our financial practitioner to pick up and be able to use in terms of a framework or a guideline. So there's four different A's in the model, hence the name. And the first one on there is the alliance. And so that's the relationship that the client and the coach build together. And I'm just going to use the term client just because it's easiest, although with a lot of my extension work and my terminology, I use learner, but some people use coachee, so I'm just going to use client for our conversation. So Michael had talked about having a contract or an agreement, and there is a sample coaching agreement with our Money Smart and Head Start materials, and then I know like Dane County and St. Croix County, there's different coaching contracts, so there's some on our coaching website. And even that, I played around with the coaching contract and agreement. We had legal at one point with the UW check out the wording saying, you know, we don't offer legal advice or contact creditors. But there's a part of the contract or agreement to sign that the bottom of that, so the both the coach and the client can sign it. And I ended up taking away the signature part for my Head Start parents, just because we had talked about it, we reviewed it, we came up to our own agreement, and it felt like it was detracting from our alliance building to have us both sign it, you know, like signing a used car contract or something. So I removed that part, and then I know other people leave that signature part in there. So it's even what feels most comfortable with your clientele and for the relationship building. But the alliance building, I mean, it definitely happens at that first meeting, and maybe that first meeting is that somebody comes to one of your workshops and you put in a pitch for follow-up coaching. So maybe they're already developing that relationship ahead of time. So that alliance building is ongoing. I mean, it's not just at that first coaching encounter. It's kind of just your relationship with an individual, and we know how important relationships are. And one of the things that I think is important to do with the alliance building in that very first coaching session is to even talk about ending the relationship. Because as people start to get more self-reliant and they start meeting their goals, they have a tendency to kind of drift off. And so I like to tell people that up front that that's going to be the signal to me that they're ready to end the coaching. I mean, we plan on 3 months, and then if they're starting to like do more things independently and check in less, then that'll be the signal that they're ready to go, or else that maybe some other priority has come up. So I even do that with that upfront relationship building because it's easier to talk about before it's actually happened. And also with the alliance building, just keeping it, you know, positive, trying to get positive affirmations. And there was an interesting study out there looking at the use of positive affirmations, particularly with people in poverty. How important that is to openness to problem solving and decreasing defensiveness when it comes to talking about problems or goals. So just keeping it positive and really focusing on that you're in this together as a team, the coach and the client. So that's the alliance that's kind of ongoing through all the coaching relationships. And the next part of that is the agenda. And typically when people come to coaching, they have like a long-term agenda. Michael mentioned maybe they want to be a homeowner, or maybe they want to purchase a car, or maybe they just want to get a better handle on the finances, whatever a better handle looks like to them. So usually there's some kind of long-term that could take months or it could even take years, or they might discover it's not realistic or it's not what they want or it's not going to happen. But so there's that longer-term agenda. But then it's for each coaching session, whether you're, you know, talking with somebody for 20 minutes on the phone or they're in your office for 45 minutes, for each of those coaching sessions, you want to have an agenda of what would they like to get out of the meeting today. So what's on their mind and what one thing could they you talk about today that would help them get them closer to that long-term agenda. So it starts chunking down that really big task into some doable action steps. So, and one of the things we look at with setting that agenda is it's all about what the client wants to work on. I've done coaching with individuals who want to be a homeowner, yet they still have collections and judgments. And it's all about, okay, where do they want to start? You know, do they want to start with the credit, or do they want to start looking at homes or talking to realtors? It's whatever is going to keep their motivation going, and they're going to, you know, figure these things out as they go along, and I'll be there to help support that process. So it's all about where they want to start, because that's where their energy is already going, and that's where their determination is. That's not to say that the coach doesn't have their own agenda for the session, but what I mean by the coach's agenda is what the agency is paying for that or sponsoring the coaching. If they have requirements of the coach, then that's something the coach has to put up front on the table. For example, with our Money Smart and Head Start, we ask that everyone gets a copy of their credit report when we first start to meet them. So that was something that was an agenda item I brought to the table. I told them they didn't have to share it with me, that was up to them for their information, and most people did, but that was just one thing that I said I needed you to, the clients, to be able to do. Another agenda item might be using a pre or post self-assessment or a financial assessment or the 8-question survey, to saying this is a requirement for our coaching. So it really, the coach's agenda doesn't have anything to do with the client's actual goals. It's maybe some documentation or the agenda of the organization the coach works with. So another thing about the agenda is really looking at keeping it more, I like to use the term vision-based, so more of that future-oriented, what is that ideal that we want to be working towards? Just to kind of keep that forward momentum going. One of the things that I've learned more about looking at goal attainment is that if you start to get too specific about the goal, okay, what is it? How much is it going to cost you? You know, what's going to be your first step? When people start to get too specific about attaining that agenda item and what kind of action steps, that can really lower motivation. That can be overwhelming for some people. Sometimes they shut down. And they might have less responsibility or ownership for the goal. So it's really kind of walking that fine line, and that's, you can see how the relationship is so important, because you want to be able to support people in getting that concrete goal, but without kind of squelching their enthusiasm and their vision for, you know, this is what I really want. So after that agenda setting, then you look at awareness. And I have to say that building awareness and exploring their interest and their motivation around whatever that the goal is for the session, that's probably at least half the session, if not, you know, 70 or 80% of the time during a coaching meeting. Because it's all about what is it about that goal that's so important. Because, you know, we might not be around when the person attains the goal. It might be years. So how are they going to keep up that motivation? So what is it about that goal, and what keeps them going day to day in order to move forward towards that goal? So it's very different than a counseling approach where a person comes in and, you know, I'm behind on my utility bills. So, okay, what can we do? Figure out how much you have, who can you call for, you know, assistance, or start working out a payment plan. So it's very different in terms of it's not working on an immediate crisis or an immediate, this is what I want to walk away with. It's more of the, this is who I want to be. This is, I want to be a person who is aware of their spending or tracks their budget, or I want to be a homeowner. So it's really kind of exploring that who the person wants to become or be more like in their vision. There was a interesting study. So Case Western Reserve has a coaching lab. It's not a financial coaching, but it's just for coaching. And they have been looking at using positive emotions. And they've hooked people up to fMRIs, those magnetic resonance machines, And they had them talk to more of a positive coach for a session, and they looked at their brain functioning. And then they had a different coaching session a few weeks later where a person was more goal-oriented, more concrete and less vision-oriented, and looked at how the brain responded. And they saw with the positive coaching that it really triggered that parasympathetic nervous system that, you know, you think about the fight or flight. So it triggered that part that that is the opposite of the cortisol. I forget, the endorphins, that's what it is. And it really helped the person be more open to problem solving, some more creative thinking, releasing more of those positive emotions versus if a person was overly focused on goals and actions and steps, that triggers the cortisol levels in the person being coached and it kind of shuts them down a little bit. So their takeaway, and they're still studying this, but their takeaway is really to what can you do to tap into those positive emotions, you know, get the endorphins going, but then also be able to discuss the dissatisfaction that a person currently has with what's going on. Because if you're just focusing on how rosy everything is, then they don't have any reason to change. So it's really, you can see how you're really walking a line and that importance of that relationship building to be able to focus on, you know, this is great, you're doing all these great things, and then what? You know, what's that next step? How can you make it even better? So it really is kind of, you know, that practice of knowing your client and knowing, you know, what kind of keeps them going and how much is too much. And then finally is the action. So maybe that's the last 5 or 10 minutes of your meeting, however long you're meeting for, and you start looking at, okay, we've talked about this and how important it is and your ideas and all the range of possibilities. So what would you like to do with this? And what I've seen, when I really have had a good coaching session where the person has really done more exploring, they start to naturally identify their own action steps. Well, I'm thinking about this, and it just kind of flows into that. If they're feeling a little stuck or haven't come up with something, then here's an opportunity for the coach to suggest some action steps, to just raise some possibilities or even a homework assignment in terms of, you know, just being aware of your spending. Maybe they're overwhelmed by the thought of tracking, but maybe track just one thing like groceries or just being aware of where the money's going without even writing it down because maybe that's too much of a hurdle right now. So the point is to leave people with some kind of homework, ideally that they've identified for themselves, but if not, you can give them some kind of awareness-raising exercise or activity. And the importance of that homework is there's been a few studies out there that looked at giving people some different assignments. You know, maybe it's in the group that they were studying, it's checking in on a website and doing some maybe spatial relations or memory tasks at certain points during the day, and then having people look at their spending and their impulse spending. And they looked at, as people were going through that, you know, having to put some mental energy into doing some of these tasks online, they were more likely to do some impulse spending when they were so drained that they just didn't have any more self-control left in themselves. So they figured self-control was like a muscle. You have to exercise it, and knowing that you're going to be a little bit weaker while you're exercising, you know, depending on what you did this weekend, you might be a little sore today. So you have to slowly build that up. And then you get to the point where your self-control is a little bit stronger after building it up. So, and meanwhile, the coach can be there to help check in, to help provide that support and help provide that encouragement while you're building up your self-control muscle. And they even found that it really didn't even matter what kind of action steps the client took or what kind of practice assignments, as long as they had something that they, you know, had to do and had to keep checking in on, that helped build up that self-control muscle. So I don't get all bent out of shape. Depending on whatever the person wants to do, if it's something they want to do, that's great. And then they know, because of our coaching alliance, that I am going to ask them about it. And I would have to say, you know, one of those, ideally in the ideal world, to cannot go longer than 2 or even 3 weeks before you have some kind of check-in. Because like most of us, you know, you have some kind of assignment or something you want to do, and, you know, I'd be the first one to wait till the night before and then do it. But then I would do it if I knew somebody was going to ask me. So just to be sure when you end up that coaching session that you have some way to check in or that next meeting so that you have some way to kind of follow up. And again, with that action step, it's not like the client is responsible to the coach. The client's responsible to the alliance. This is what we agreed. This is what works for both of us. It's not like the coach is, you know, the hall monitor looking at the past that, oh, you're going to do this or you're not going to do that. So it's really keeping that responsibility and the ownership on the client. And as Michael said, really coaching sessions, they can be done in person. They can be done on telephone, video conferencing. A lot of the coaching practice I do now is just on the telephone. And as a lot of coaching is being done just using the phone or video conference. Or if you have somebody coming into your office, you know, that's wonderful. Or, if, you know, depending on if you're in the Head Start program, if you're able to do any home visits. And each of those approaches, of course, like anything, has its drawbacks and has its benefits. You know, if you're doing it telephone or video based, you know, they have to have the technology, but then you can, you know, travel's involved and you can kind of squeeze in a little bit more time. But it's a little different, you know, versus having that face-to-face where you can do some more relationship building. So again, it's just whatever's going to be the most practical. And then also being able to, you know, celebrate the steps that are taken along the way. If there's some kind of setback or something doesn't happen, then that's just an opportunity to learn more about, okay, maybe this wasn't a realistic goal, or maybe this was taking on too much, or maybe this isn't the right goal, or maybe we're, you know, we're changing direction a little bit here. So it's really a chance to tease apart whatever is happening in between those coaching sessions. And I'll leave it at that in terms of, you know, what the model is and how we structure coaching. And turn it back over to Michael to look at just coaching as a complement where you can, it's a value added to all the other financial education efforts that we have.
Great. Thanks, Peggy. And, you know, hopefully that A4 framework is helpful as you think about the coaching approach. And we, you know, I think there's some more versions of models like that, but I think that this provides a sort of useful alliteration, if nothing else, to think about what goes on in that coaching relationship. I won't say a whole lot about coaching as a complement. I just want to encourage everyone to think about coaching as being another approach, not a replacement for other models. And very often when people do counseling or planning or education, they will employ coaching techniques. And so we see a lot of applications of coaching as a communication style and as a client engagement tool that could be applied in a number of different settings. And so even if you don't end up doing quote-unquote coaching, you might do coaching techniques in these other settings. And so there in no way are we to suggest that these other strategies aren't important. And if anything, they're complements. They're sort of happening side by side with coaching, or maybe there's a handoff from one to the other. But it's not a case where we're suggesting coaching should be the only strategy that exists for building financial capability. It really is a multi-pronged effort, I think, for a lot of people in terms of how they build their own financial capability. I'll stop in a minute and we can have some discussions and questions. But I want to talk a little about some issues we see coming into the future. We've been engaged in a number of discussions with funders and federal agencies and others about this financial coaching topic. It really has sort of gained attention and, you know, it's gotten a lot of excitement. And that's exciting. I mean, it's exciting to see these ideas sort of take off. But on the other hand, it also raises a lot of issues. And, you know, I want to share some of those issues so you can be thinking about those, how they might apply in your own work. One is outcomes measurement. You know, funders always want to see outcomes for any program. And if your program is home buyer education, that's easy. You know, people buy homes and then they don't default on their mortgage or, you know, some variation like that. it's harder with coaching because it's not even, if we were to say, well, okay, we're going to measure the amount of people's savings in their savings account. Well, not everybody's goal is going to be to build up savings in their savings account. Some will save in some other format. Some will actually reduce their savings because they're investing in something that's for their long-term financial security, like a small business. Some may actually borrow more. It's all over the place. And so that makes it harder to report on outcomes, and I think a challenge going forward. So we have to think about measures that are more universal in nature, more about perception, about general financial well-being, about capability, about confidence, about having goals and achieving goals. And so the financial capability scale, which I think we talked about, I don't recall now if it was last month or the month before, but we've talked about this idea of getting at these measures through the scale, and the CORA survey has this financial capability scale as well. I mean, that's an example of the kinds of measures we might be thinking about, things that are going to generally move in a common direction when we have people taking control of their finances and feeling more confident, and those kinds of measures might be more appropriate and useful. Thinking about the future of coaching, I think there's a lot to be excited about. We've seen, as I mentioned before, this new, I think it's about a $30 million initiative for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to roll out coaching programs across the country. We've seen more coaching models that maybe include more technology, more video, some peer-to-peer coaching or even group coaching where you have a coach and three or four coaches who work together. Coaching applied in a family or relationship context, so spouses or even multi-generation coaching. So we've seen, I think a proliferation of new ideas, and who knows how all these will work out, but I think it's exciting to see some experimentation and innovation in the field. We also have some, exciting applications of how coaching might work alongside some other behavioral strategies. For example, I was at a meeting recently about executive attention and how both children and adults develop executive attention, how they essentially learn how to take charge of their own cognition, to focus on tasks, to create effectively to-do lists and hold themselves accountable to get things done and not get distracted. Those are some complementary ideas to what we think about with coaching as well. And so these sort of intersections between other areas of positive psychology and coaching, I think, are really exciting going forward. There is a new program offered by the AFCPE. Some of you I know are members of AFCPE in your education and counseling association. But they actually now have a coaching certification program. So it's, I think, the only coaching certification program that's really focused on financial issues, especially for community-based educators. There are other financial education and financial coaching certifications and trainings out there. In fact, there's I think at our last count, about a dozen different financial coaching trainings out there. Generally teaching the same sorts of content, but there's variation. There's variation in length and the rigor and the assumptions about skills coming in the door. And so that's challenging because it's hard to know who is a coach, quote unquote, who's a coach and who's not a coach, and which programs are really coaching and which programs are sort of the application of coaching techniques. And I think that's it's going to be one of those things we have to be careful of going forward. When we hear people saying that they're a coach or doing coaching, and what does that really mean? We don't have strong standards or, ways to assure that people who are doing this work are really doing what we think of as when we talk about coaching. In the end, it's exciting because people have all very, widely varied financial issues that they need to deal with, and having a range of different strategies and options is probably a good thing. And, much of this is going to depend upon who your learning audience is, who your coaches are, who you are as a coach, or what the program, the institutional or organizational sponsor or partner are with these different coaching relationships. And so, the exact nature of coaching is going to vary based upon the context. And that's good. I think we're trying to figure out how to do that matching better. But we don't expect everyone to use exactly the same model. A4 might work for some some programs and not for others. And so we expect there to be some more innovation and change over time. We don't claim to know the right way to do all these kinds of things. We just think that what's here is pretty promising. I'll stop there. I just want to note that in the bottom of the brief, there's a number of different websites. I've already talked about the UWEX financial coaching site. There's also a link to the ASCPE certification. There's also a link to a website called instituteofcoaching.org, which is comes out of Boston through the McLean Hospital, focused initially more on health coaching, but really has become a national leader in coaching techniques and bringing international experts on coaching. And it's they have some nice materials for free available on their website, and then members get an enhanced level of access to information. But I think it's promising that the health field has really embraced the coaching technique, perhaps suggesting that the application of these to the financial area is good as well. So that's a resource to check out. And then, of course, the Center for Financial Security has some coaching resources on its website as well, particularly in its work with the Andy Casey Foundation and the Asset Funders Network. So we've gotten some good support from philanthropy to engage in this research around coaching and how coaching works. So I'll stop there, and feel free to ask me or Peggy any questions or comments or other observations about the content we've talked about today.
I'd like to hear if anyone is offering coaching kind of as a value added to other programs they're doing, or as a way to invite people to keep moving forward on their goals.
This is Canton from Trempealeau County. I'm not a quote-unquote financial coach, although, as was indicated in the discussion, I certainly do employ some of the, approaches. And one of the things that stood out to me is just thinking about the studies that you cited, Peggy, on kind of the positive interactions and the impact that it has on participants that we're working with. I think in family living, there's a lot of folks who use the Amy and Flo materials on kind of stress and the effects on the brain. And so just thinking when we're working with people, this is a high-stress thing, and if we're trying to set people up for success, taking an approach that's going to encourage more production of endorphins versus the fight-or-flight response where they want to, like, run away or punch me will inevitably make for a better outcome. So I'm still looking at kind of what does coaching mean versus kind of being available and sharing resources on financial capacity. So anyway, there's my response.
Well, and thanks, Catherine. That's helpful. And thank you for pointing out again, too, that I think all of us at least try to use some of those coaching skills and positive communication and positivity, even if it's not, you know, a true coaching session framework, and I'm using air quotes, we can still learn a lot and use those skills in our day-to-day interactions, even not surrounding money.
Hi, Peggy. This is Carol in Washington County. One thing that I've been working on with my financial jail programming is offering two workshops, one more on spending plans, some basics, and then one on credit, and then offering to the, I'm in particular working with the female Huber audience, and offering them a 30-minute coaching session that third week. I do this 3 weeks in a row. And I've had quite a few take me up on that, three or four from the previous sessions, just to sit and talk one-on-one and you know, start asking them some of those questions about what their goals are, because they'll be transitioning sooner than later in the Huber program, and probably are already working. So it seemed like a good kind of a win-win, because they're working on some of those goals when we speak to one another. So kind of that value-added piece that you were asking about.
Cool. That's great. Any other thoughts or opportunities that people have had to offer up coaching or use their coaching skills?
Hey, this is Lori up in Sawyer County, and I haven't had the opportunity yet, other than with one client who hugged me, so that sounded good. But I did want to point out, this past week I went to a training that was offered in our area, specifically about motivational interviewing or motivational conversations, and I found it useful, I guess, in just some tips of things that I felt like were pretty applicable to the whole financial coaching idea as well. So if you see anything about motivational interviewing in your area, it might be something to look at.
That's a cool way to approach it, too. I've been through a couple-day motivational interview training, and it's really interesting because motivational interviewing uses some of the same skills and even some of the same language that coaching does, and kind of that same framework of relationship building. And I'm sorry, I get a lot of echo here. And goal setting and moving forward. And Lori, jump in if there's something that jumped out at you. With the motivational interviewing, it comes from a linguistic-based approach, so it looks at the client's language and looks at how to start changing that language, kind of that cognitive behavioral approach, to get somebody from like a should mindset to a I will do this mindset. So really focused on that language and that moving forward, again, with some of those same positive communication skills. Is that kind of what your takeaway was too, Lori?
I would say it probably, the training that I went to was just, you know, a few hours, so they didn't get into much about the cognitive change, but that basic relationship building and just keeping people moving forward was certainly, you know, the takeaway that I had. One of the quotes that I really liked was, doing motivational interviewing with someone is like entering their home. One should enter with respect, interest, kindness, and affirm what is good, and refrain from providing unsolicited advice about how to rearrange the furniture. So it just made me think about financial coaching, too. It's not my agenda and what I think needs to change, but what their goals are.
Good advice for financial coaches and mother-in-laws, in case you have any of those on the line, too. if there's nothing else, Michael, I can put in a plug for some of our other coaching supports that are out there.
That'd be great. Why don't you go ahead and just close out the call with for what's up, what's coming up.
Okay. Well, I guess just to say, if you haven't been on the FYI coaching website lately, I made 3 demonstration videos for the A4 model with 3 people who generously let me tape and use some of our coaching conversations. So they're on the website in terms of just having a demo that, you know, you can use yourself, or if you do any volunteer training, you're welcome to use those. And then we have a few in-person coaching trainings that are coming up that Joanne Sprain and Carol Brolic and I will be doing. The first one is June 5th. It's at the St. Croix County Extension Office. And I had put registration in the FL Connection last month, and I can put it in again this month. It's for family living educators. The one-day fee for June 5th is $35. And then you can get other expenses reimbursed if you're on a financial team member. And then for county partners, the registration is $70. And it includes lunch and snacks and handouts, so not horrible. And then the next training will be in Madison. It's October 13th and 14th because we're doing the one-day introductory, and then we're going to do a second day and advancing and practicing your skills, just to give a chance to kind of get a little more practice and get behind some more of the different skills and the different techniques with coaching. So, again, that'll be October 13th, 14th, but registration information is not out for that. So those are, I guess, a few different things to learn more about coaching and coaching skills. And then, as Michael mentioned, the financial team is also sponsoring the Lunch and Learn on Monday, May 18th. Well, we have 4 different book reviews for some summer reading, which I think will be really interesting because they're for different, you know, generations. They're for kind of the 20-somethings all the way to looking at retirement and everything in between, and for parents working with kids. So it's a wide range of books, and I think that'll be interesting. And, of course, if you can't make it live, it'll be archived. So any other questions or thoughts before we close out? Okay. Well, I appreciate everybody sharing in, and if you have any questions, of course, you can just drop Michael or drop me a line. Thanks, and enjoy your rainy Monday.
Thanks, everybody, and thanks, Peggy.